This is Mike Hennessy, and on behalf of the team at DecodingHim.com, I'm pleased to welcome you to today's interview with Dr. Paulette Sherman. Dr. Paulette Sherman, welcome. We're glad to have you with us today. Could you introduce yourself and give us some of your background, please?
Sure. Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I am a licensed psychologist and a certified life coach, and I tend to specialize in relationships, particularly dating, since I've written, I think, 6 books now on relationships and dating. So I generally help patients and clients to attract a partner that best suits them.
Today's topic is about something called conscious dating. Can you explain to our readers and our subscribers what you mean by conscious dating? And I suppose that if we're saying conscious dating, there's another kind of dating out there that it might be compared to. What are the differences between conscious dating and maybe other kinds of dating?
That's a good question. When I say conscious dating, I mean that you know yourself, you know what's best for you, and then you pick that accordingly. So you're using your head as much as your heart. I think general dating, people go a lot on their unconscious and their feelings and their impulses. So if they're very attracted to somebody, if they have a certain sort of unconscious type, they tend to pick that person over and over again, even if they might look different. You know, a lot of their qualities are the same. So by teaching people to date consciously, they become aware of what hasn't worked for them in the past and what those impulses and feelings that they usually act on are, so that they can then reverse that and break the pattern.
So it's the idea sounds to me like what you're getting at is dating with a plan, maybe not necessarily a rigid plan, but at least some sort of idea of trying to accomplish something with the date as opposed to maybe just going out for a good time. Is that right?
Yeah, that's definitely true, because if you're just looking to date and have fun, generally it doesn't really matter, I guess, in a sense, who you pick. Or, you know, you don't need to have criteria. You can just go with the flow. But I think it's more for people who are looking for a certain type of long-term relationship or marriage or companion that they would need to sort of make sure that it would end up a different way. Otherwise, you keep doing the same thing and hoping for different results, and you never learn from the process.
And we know what that's called. Wasn't that what Einstein called the definition of insanity?
Yeah, Einstein said it, yep.
Now, in your book, Dating from the Inside Out, you talk about being aware of relationship patterns, and that's a tricky one because a lot of times we live our lives in patterns, I think, where everybody can see patterns but us. When we're trying to understand what's going on in our own lives, we may have a problem really understanding why it is that the same thing keeps happening. And a number of our subscribers say they have the problem of repeatedly attracting the wrong kind of men and finding it hard to attract quality men.
Mm-hmm.
How does this happen? And how do you help your clients overcome the problem?
The reason that a lot of my clients or people in general tend to pick the same client, the same person over and over again, is because we all have a family blueprint that when we are young, we have a certain image of our parents, you know, of who our father is, who our mother is, and how they relate to each other, and that's even before we speak, and that to us is, you know, how we are loved and what we deserve. So if you have a father, let's say, that's, you know, sort of critical, or who's away a lot and is emotionally distant, you may tend to be attracted to the bad boy or the type of guy that isn't going to give you a lot of attention or who's very critical. And even if you are successful in many other areas of your life and disciplined and able to achieve things, you may say, well, why is my love life not working out? And why do I keep doing the same thing again and again? It's very ingrained. And so the first step is to really realize what your unconscious blueprint is, what you are attracted to that may not be good for you, and then to begin to know what the opposite would be and to look for that. And so sometimes it's helpful, none of us can see ourselves very clearly, so sometimes it's helpful to have a guide or an expert that can kind of point out what isn't working for you and what you do again and again while you date.
Is it just a matter of talking to somebody and writing down your impressions, or do you actually have a process that you go through with your clients in order to help them really narrow down and pin down what these tendencies are that keep getting them into these kinds of situations?
That's a good question. I mean, I wrote the book because for people who maybe have a stigma against coaching or therapy or don't have the time or money, you know, it's very inexpensive to spend $10 on a book. So I did try to pin down the process into three major sections and a number of exercises that people can do on their own to try to know more about who they are, what they're looking for, where they emotionally get screwed up, and how to reverse that process. So yes, it's a very detailed process in my book, Dating from the Inside Out, to help people work through that. I think sometimes, though, you can know something. I mean, take a diet, you can know what you're supposed to eat, but then you'll have a really emotionally bad day, and, you know, sometimes you'll just get off the horse. And so it can be helpful on a weekly basis to have that person who's a coach or a therapist to sort of be checking in with you and tell you sooner, like, hey, this, you know, you're doing this again, or you're not noticing that even though this seems different, it's the same. So it's sort of that, like having a personal trainer, that person that will get you back on course. But I think the first step is having right insight. So at least if you do the book and you can begin to know what you weren't seeing before, then you kind of have the right insight and you can take better action. Otherwise, you can take all the action in the world and date, you know, 10 times a week, but still keep being attracted to the same people and end up no further along.
Mm-hmm. So as we go through this process of trying to develop better patterns, something occurred to me. I've been told, and I wonder if you would agree with this, and if you don't agree with it, please say so, that it's not always, it's really not possible to change a bad habit. You have to replace it. Is that something that makes sense to you? And maybe that would explain why it is that you can't just all of a sudden stop doing one thing and go to another way of going about things.
That's interesting. I should think about that in a broader scale. I mean, I can apply it to dating, but I know that, you know, for alcoholics, sometimes they say, just don't have alcohol in the house, don't drink alcohol, period. Whereas other times I've had patients that maybe find themselves once in a while drinking three drinks and, you know, and it's a problem and they don't want to give up drinking altogether, so they'll just try to limit themselves to one drink. And I think that is harder, but it also gives you more options if you have the discipline to be able to do that. So it depends how, I guess, intense the unconscious addiction is. So if someone is really addicted to, you know, very abusive men, then you know, I mean, I guess they need to spot that and just not do that at all, of course. But I think a lot of times we try to just titrate or decrease things. So what usually happens in reality is if somebody picks, you know, unavailable men, you know, maybe they start picking ones that are a little less unavailable or they live further away or something like that. And instead of taking 2 years with that person, they sort of realize it, even though it looks different, in 2 months. So it's like that. That's usually how habits change, so they catch it sooner. And, of course, if they're working with a coach, then that usually they catch it even sooner. But yes, we tend to sort of try to recreate the same type of relationship so we can fix what didn't work in our childhood. And so it's a very strong pattern. And I can't say that, you know, you just do the book and then it changes. No, it doesn't work like that. It usually improves over time.
It's one of those things that can be frustrating for friends, too, as well, because I think probably somewhere along the line, if we haven't had the problem ourselves, we probably have friends who fall into that pattern, and you go, there she goes again. There it
yeah.
is.
Absolutely, we've all had friends like that, right?
Yeah. So what do you do if you're a friend? I mean, I'm asking that kind of facetiously, but if you're a friend and you see a friend falling into that pattern, geez, what then? I guess that would be a whole other book, wouldn't it?
Well, my easy, right, exactly. My easy answer is go and buy the book. You can probably get it for like 25 cents to use on Amazon for your friend. It would be a big gift to them and for you probably. But, you know, I know that friends sort of want to support the person no matter where they're at, but sometimes it is useful in a kind way to just say, you know, I think you deserve the best and it seems like you're picking these men. If someone's open to hearing that, you know, that really are more critical of you, I wonder why that is. Maybe it's time to figure that out, or you know what I mean, or some who are not really there for you the way you are for them. You know, I guess it depends on the person, but a lot of times people are grateful to, you know, to hear what isn't working so that they can then change it, because they're wasting a lot of time otherwise.
Another one of our common problems that we hear about from our subscribers is dealing with emotional baggage from past relationships. And it's really hard for them to get over their old emotional wounds. And then they have a number of problems like finding it difficult to trust again or to be intimate or to let your guard down the way you have to if you're going to have a good relationship with somebody. How can women deal with the baggage of past relationships so that maybe they don't have to forget them, but at least they don't let them affect their current relationships?
Yes, I think this is a really important one because I guess 99% of relationships don't work out. You know, you might get married to one person or maybe you get married a few times and then even half of those marriages don't work out. So, I mean, relationships are constantly ending for one reason or another. And so everybody has baggage. But I think it's very important not to let those past hurts or wounds affect your future going forward, because if you know, you deserve to be happy. And really, we have these relationships to learn from them, to make us wiser and stronger and more clear about what we need. And that's why I wrote this book, because many books focus on the outside, you know, how you look, how to dress, where to go, and they don't really address your inner dating psychology. And that's what I think really directs who we pick and how happy we'll be and whether we allow love in. So in terms of your question, how do you release past baggage? It's not easy, but first you have to feel the feelings and really admit what your limiting beliefs are from those. So, for example, you know, if somebody said that, oh, you're too old for me and then broke up with you, I think that I want someone younger so I can have kids. I hear that sometimes. Then you might develop a belief like, oh, no men want anyone over 35, and then you just stop dating or you have low self-esteem from that or whatever it would be. You know, if somebody is critical to you because of your body image, then you might go into future dating situations where you don't feel yourself and you can't feel free, you know, or beautiful. So, you know, it's very important then in therapy or in coaching, or even if you can't do that by yourself, to look at those limiting beliefs and say, what do I want to be saying to myself instead? And do I want the past to keep directing my future? Because that, no matter what the other person or what situations happen outside of yourself, that is what you can control about, you know, how you feel about who you are, how you feel about the opposite sex, how you feel about relationships, and to make that positive and to remove any negative blocks so that you can proceed and be open to love. Otherwise, I don't care how much you go out, you're going to admit that and you're not going to let yourself have what you really want.
One of the other common problems we're hearing about is that women are afraid of rejection, which is only fair. I guess men would have the same fear. I mean, isn't that universal, the fear of rejection? And then repeatedly facing rejection. It's enough to make you just want to throw up your hands and just walk away and say, dating sucks, all the good guys are taken, I'm not attractive enough, to heck with it. do you have clients that come to you in that situation, and how do you help them if they're that far down that particular road?
Sure, I have them on all the continuum, but most people do fear rejection, including men, because I have, it's even harder for men sometimes, I have to say. Women feel it's harder for them because they're sitting ducks and they just have to sit there and hope someone's going to ask them out. I mean, that's how maybe traditional women approach it. But men have to kind of stick their neck out, you know, ask a lot of people, and they may get a lot of no's. And that's really hard to have to take the first step, at least traditionally speaking. But I think everyone's afraid of rejection. Sometimes people on a more minor scale are afraid to go out on dates because if they don't think that they totally like that person, then they're already thinking they're going to have to disappoint them and they don't want to be mean. On the other hand, other people have heard no before, and so they globalize that and they say that, oh, maybe no men like me because this man rejected me. What I say in reality is that, especially online, if you write 10 people, you should only expect to maybe get one response. If you get more, that's great. And I try to teach people not to personalize rejection, because according to my model, you know, you could be the greatest person in the world, but if their mother was critical, you know, that may be what they're attracted to, and you're more passive. So it could be their unconscious blueprint, their own reasons. They don't even know you after one date. So it really isn't you, per se, the real you that they're rejecting. So you just have to kind of continue to not reject yourself in the process and to like yourself, and then to know that it's a numbers game and just keep doing what you need to do, and eventually, hopefully, you will find someone appropriate for you that you like and likes you back. So I always say no is just a word like yes.
Being dispassionate about something so intimately personal as a dating relationship is tough. I mean, that's I don't think anybody would disagree with that. But it makes sense that if you can maybe look at things a little bit more at arm's length than just saying, oh my God, they don't like me. maybe that's just, as you said, it kind of resonates with me, and maybe it's worth repeating that it's not necessarily that they don't like you. It's just that for whatever reason, you don't fit the mold of what they may be looking for.
I mean, what you said is absolutely true, but I would even go further to say that I feel like I have certain people that have dated so much that they've actually just learned these precepts, because if you learn the precepts first, like the idea, I'm not into rules, but the idea that, you know, someone is not necessarily rejecting you, right? It's just what you're saying. It's not personal. Then, I mean, yes, you may have feelings after one or two dates, and then start to think, why me? You know, I liked him so much. Why didn't it work out? But if you try to learn this first, then you can remember that, you know, remember it, and maybe you will get to the point where you won't just let your feelings completely take over. I mean, it depends on the person. I think sometimes people get into that phase more further down the road. So it is helpful in the beginning to just remember these things that are true for everybody.
One thing that you strongly recommend in your book is that every person should learn to love themselves. And we live in a world where that's pretty darn difficult, because we're just constantly bombarded with messages that we're not good enough. We need to look a certain way. We need to lose a certain amount of weight. We need to wear certain kinds of clothes, drive a certain kind of car. Just fill in the blank. I mean, these messages are everywhere. If you don't do this or you don't do that, you're not good enough. How do you help build up a healthy sense of self-love? Not necessarily going the other way, of getting too carried away with it, but what is it that you see as being important in helping someone build up a good self-love?
I think building up self-love is probably the most important thing in the world, and it gets a really bad rap because, like you said, you don't want to go the other way and be arrogant and be selfish, and, you know, love is about giving to another person, yada, yada, yada. All of that is true, too, but I think that everything we do is sourced from ourselves, from our self-worth at a very early age, you know, from what we think is possible for us. And, you know, Louise Hay, the queen of self-care, talks a lot about that, about how sometimes just by changing what you say to yourself, you get so much success in other areas without even really taking so much other action, because something opens up inside, which then can be manifest outside. So I talk about in my book that, and I also think specifically for dating, it's very important because women tend to lose themselves. I guess it could be the same for a man too, but, you know, in a relationship and sort of bend themselves to try to work it out. And in the end, you know, you can do that, but then you get married, the person doesn't know who you are, and it doesn't work out anyway, right? Because you can't live together, the person is not supportive of the core things that you need, or vice versa, if you're not real and authentic. So my book is very much about first loving yourself and then being authentic about who you are so you can find the appropriate match. And I have a whole section on how to do that. And one thing I recommend, which sounds a little cheesy, is to date yourself, to actually be comfortable spending time with yourself, to really get to a point where you rate your life satisfaction and you love your life before you try to share it with somebody, so that you aren't going to just sell yourself out in order to catch a guy and then be miserable. You know, many people just want to get married because they can say they're married, but you remember you have to live with somebody, and that's, you know, that's a whole other book that takes work too. So you might as well choose the right person. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if you commit to yourself and then the rest of the things in your life are extension of that, you will do far better in the end.
What are some of the phrases that indicate to you when you talk to a client, and we are talking basically to women today, what are some of the things that you're listening for? Are there some certain phrases that tell you a woman is not necessarily in a good place when it comes to self-love? And are there phrases or things that you try to get women to absorb into their being, for lack of a better term, that will help them boost their self-esteem and build their self-love?
I think that normally in psychotherapy, since I am a psychologist and I'm also a dating coach, but in psychotherapy you kind of look at where they got the limiting beliefs to begin with. I don't necessarily go way into the past, but I think that, you know, is the self-esteem messages that they got, first of all, from their parents, and what were they? Is it something past baggage they've gotten from past boyfriends? So first to isolate what the messages are, because I meant to say this to you before, but it goes, thought leads to feeling, leads to action. So if you're thinking, you know, I'll use the age one again, but, you know, I'm too old, no men are going to be attracted to me, then I feel really low self-esteem, and then maybe I don't go out as much, or I, you know, that comes across on my date. So I think to isolate what the limiting beliefs are, where they came from, and then to really help them look at that and say, well, do you know anybody, challenge that, you know, do you know anybody who's 42? I just know somebody who met somebody and got married and actually did in vitro and had a baby, let's say, you know. So it is, first of all, possible, and secondly, like, you know, how does it feel 24/7 to be saying these things to yourself? Because that's something that you can control. And what, how can you, you know, they say that you, the way you love yourself is how much you let someone else love you. So to begin with that, reparenting yourself, changing the voice of what you say to yourself, and giving yourself more love and opportunity so that you feel better and that more confident and that comes across. Was that your whole question?
I think that's an important thing, that there are certain tip-offs. There's the things that we say, and it's interesting that you use the idea of thoughts and words and action, because all these things kind of take on the life of their own once they get implanted. You end up thinking a thought, you end up expressing a thought, and the next thing you know, you're acting on a thought. And it almost sounds mystical or something like that, but it's really not. It's pretty concrete. And it's another one of those things we're talking about, going into bad habits and trying to break them, or at least to replace them with more healthy habits. So certainly that makes perfect sense to me.
Well, that's great. Yeah, and I do have concrete exercises in the book where they actually list off what they keep saying to themselves and what stops them, and then how to reverse that and what would they say instead. So then it is very, it's not easy, but it's very simple and concrete to just try to catch yourself and say that instead, and to realize that that was a story you created, and that you know, there are other options and ways to see that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you recommend that women date more than one, have one man in the dating cycle at the same time? I mean, it's like the question is worded multiple men, when that certainly calls up some images that I don't think any of us want to really visit. But if we're saying when you're in the dating process, should you date one man exclusively at a time, or is it okay to maybe have a date with Harry on Tuesday and maybe a date with Fred on Friday?
Well, I was going to tease you and say, when I have an image of, like, say, Mary dating many guys, it gives me a big smile. I don't see anything wrong with it. But, you know, I will challenge you to say that if you imagine Johnny, like, right, that you probably wouldn't even do it, not you personally, but we wouldn't do a second take on it. You know what I mean? We expect guys to want to date many women, and then only when they really fall in love or they really think it's worth it do they sort of begrudgingly, at least traditionally speaking, right, say, okay, like, I'll get in a relationship, or okay, I'll get married, right? That's sort of the traditional thing, and I don't think that's right. I mean, I think that times have changed, that we are equal opportunity, and that I really believe people should be kind and authentic no matter what the area we're talking about, including dating. However, I don't think there should be a double standard anymore, and I recently wrote a book called When Mars on a Date, which is really about that. It's a feminist dating book. But going back to your question, you know, it traditionally speaking, unless one or the other person says, I'd like to be exclusive, then both people have the option to date. But what's really usually happened is that men will continue to date, and women will say after the second date sometimes, oh, but I can see he really likes me. He's probably not dating anyone else, but I don't want to say anything because I'm a passive party, right? So I'll just sit here and wait until he marries me or whatever, or hope it'll work out. And then they're not, I won't say wasting time, but they're sort of just sitting there in a holding pattern without any real, you know, sense of self or power when they're dating. And I think that it's a better situation. I'm not even necessarily talking about sleeping around. That's a separate issue. If you feel, you know, as a woman that you can sleep with more than one person, or you want to and not get emotionally attached, and, you know, that works for you in your version of sex, then fine. But otherwise, you know, plenty of people will date for like 4 or 5 months, different people, not sleep with them, just get to know them as friends or as people, and then based on that relationship or that person and really knowing them, then they would decide who, you know, kind of who earned me, like who do I feel is best for me, and do I want to take that other step and close down my other options, instead of feeling like it's a scarcity game and like, oh my God, I got to find a husband, he's pretty cute, let me try to make this work. And then you put in all this work to trying to make it work, and it might not, and you wasted a year without any promises. So I think that's a mistake. So yeah, I do think that it's good to do I don't know what you called it, but multiple dating, to date multiple partners in the beginning, call it volume dating, if you will, until there's really enough of a reason to commit to somebody. based on his action over time. Yeah.
You were mentioning this, that some of the things have changed, and of course that is true. Our role, the gender roles are evolving and moving into different patterns than when I was growing up or going to high school or whatever. It's completely different now, and yet there are also some old problems that are universal, I think, and the most common one that goes way on back is, what do you do if you have a first date and the man says he'll call and he doesn't call? What do you do? Do you follow up and call him or what?
My first thing is move on. But I'll go a little, I'll say a little more. But so you're saying, what do you do if the guy, you really like the guy and you've had one date and he doesn't call and he says he would call?
Right.
I mean, first of all, I think this about men and women, regardless of dating, that you want to look at, hopefully you want people in your life to most extent that do what they say they're going to do. Otherwise, you're going to be running in circles and you only have so much time and energy. Of course, no one's perfect, right? And everyone has situations and reasons that they don't sometimes follow through. So, I'd say especially in the beginning, keep living your life. That's something women don't always do. Big mistake. Like, if you go to, Pilates or work out or see your friends or see your family, sometimes people like someone so much that they jump in, see them all the time, obviously if they've only had one date, you're not going to do that, but keep living your life and don't wait by the phone. That's one definite important point. But also the other thing not to do, which I mentioned before, is make it about you and do like a pity party about, what's wrong with you, why didn't he call? Because the truth is, if someone says they're going to do something, that's more about them if they don't do it. So who knows, maybe he got back together with his ex-girlfriend, maybe he just isn't a person of his word, and then in a way you should be thinking your lucky stars that you're not wasting more time on him, you know what I mean? But I would also say, and this is a point that I think John Gray made in one of his dating books, that sometimes men take a little time and then call, and I think he said, try not to be, really nasty if somebody does call back a second time. And even though I don't often agree with some of those other points, I do kind of agree that in the beginning, if you're doing what I said, which is date other people and not focus on one until they kind of deserve it, and the guy's doing the same, then, he has a busy life. He's still getting to know you. And so that's still appropriate to the level of relationship. So if he calls you 2 weeks later, hey, he's going to give you a free dinner. You know what I mean? He's a nice guy. Don't have to offer him anything that isn't appropriate. So, you could just be nice and go out again if that's what you want to do. Given, hopefully, he apologizes, a reason, he's busy. Sorry, I know I said I'd call, but I couldn't. I think you can give people the benefit of the doubt once or twice. If someone stands you up, or something bigger, then I don't think you want to subject yourself to that. But the thing not to do is blame yourself, perseverate on it, wait by the phone, or anything like that. I would say just move on and then decide how to handle it if he calls again. If it becomes a pattern, definitely don't waste your time on that person, because then you're just sort of abusing yourself.
Well, here's one that even goes a little deeper than that, where sometimes a man and a woman will have a few good dates and everything's going along fine, and the next thing you know, she says, he's gone. He's disappeared on me. Why does this happen if things seem to be going well? I mean, is that something you've taken a look at?
Yeah, we could ask some of these guys that. I don't know. And I mean, again, it's not just the guys. I've heard women do things to men, too. But I've definitely heard things, not even more than a couple of dates, where I've had clients that, for 2 months almost, regularly everything's going great. Often it's like someone will go away for a vacation and they just drop off the earth and no one has the manners to kind of call and say, listen, my ex-girlfriend came back, or I just got scared, or whatever it is, I think I'm going to take a break for a while. So it's just very, difficult for that person to understand that sort of shift and to not, to not know as a woman, let's say, if she should reach out or try to explore what's going on. So again, the first thing that's really important is not to reject yourself in the process or think you did anything wrong, because clearly many of the times it's nothing to that. Sometimes guys just freak out and they can't deal with the intimacy, or they say, whoa, they're the ones who invite you to see them multiple times a week. This happens a lot. And everything's going swimmingly, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, I'm in a relationship, and I wasn't ready for that. And they've created it. So, again, that's unconscious dating, right? They're not aware of their patterns. This is something they do again and again, and it's not your fault. So either they need to become aware of that and take responsibility and speak about what they need. Maybe I need to see you less. I'm getting a little afraid. Many people can't do that. If they're not insightful and aware enough to deal with that, then you might want to just find somebody who's more ready, you know, who isn't going to jerk you around. But definitely not to blame yourself or to feel unlovable because someone treated you that way. And I think it's appropriate to feel not happy about it, you know. Either you can just move on or, you know, I think it's also reasonable to just so you don't wonder to maybe, like, call the person or email them and just say, hey, just wanted to check if you're okay or what have you. But then after that, I think you should just move on because you're not going to chase someone unavailable, again, who treats you badly, so...
Some experts say that men tend to respect and value a woman more when she clearly communicates her boundaries and lets him know right up front what's acceptable and what isn't. And one example might be not confirming a date is not acceptable, or not planning a date a few days in advance is not acceptable. Late night booty calls, not acceptable, that sort of thing. How do you go about constructing reasonable boundaries for yourself? And maybe not even boundaries that you have to discuss with somebody, but just say, these are the things that I think are important, and we're just not going to cross those boundaries until I'm darn good and ready.
That is a really good point. In fact, that was sort of the whole premise for dating from the inside out, because it's not so much only what you tell other people or what action you take, it's what you know and believe about yourself too that comes across, even without saying it sometimes. So I should have put that section in my book because it's a good point, but knowing your own boundaries, knowing what's okay for you, and then acting accordingly, even with your body language, I think someone will get the point, you know, or your voice. So it's not like, you know, becoming a mom or a school mom and saying on the second date, oh, remember, you need to call me by Wednesday, and you need to, because that person's going to feel really controlled. I think it's more just knowing who you are, and it's the same thing that if a girlfriend made plans with you and then didn't, you know, show up or change at the last minute, you probably wouldn't want to keep going out with her regularly, you know. So it's kind of knowing what you... expect in a relationship in general and what you think is polite communication, and then being able to, you know, without overreacting, communicate that to the other person. So, you know, a lot of people will just play the rules and games, which I don't feel is effective. Like, that, you know, if somebody doesn't call by Wednesday, the rules is that you just say you're washing your hair. So they find out from, you know, over and over, if this happens from your behavior, they learn to, I guess the idea is to call before Wednesday. Personally, I think that you could just say you're busy if you're busy, and then there's no problem just being honest and communicating, not in a sort of punitive type way, but just, hey, you know, I'm pretty busy, and whether it's with my friends or whoever, I generally need a little more lead time or like a little more lead time to go out, or, you know, I don't, and that's the same thing for the booty call, right? You don't owe anyone anything. You don't have to feel comfortable going to somebody's house, so you can say, like, I tend to date in public places at first, you know, I don't really feel comfortable going to someone's house in the beginning. I know that, you know, people worry about what everyone else is doing because people are having sex on the third date, but if you really know and like yourself, which is what my book's about, then that's your boundary, and you need to be okay with that, and the right guy is going to be okay with that too. So, just feeling comfortable with yourself, seeing it from a place of self-love rather than being punitive and trying to control someone that you don't even know yet. I think that tone or that context is important.
In a relationship, you talk about different levels of commitment, starting from casual dating to exclusive dating to becoming a girlfriend, all the way up to getting married. Now, this strikes me as a reasonable approach. However, it also looks like there may be a flip side to this, where what if you feel like the relationship is at one stage and perhaps your partner feels like it's at a different stage? How do you make sure that you're on the same page and that you both agree as to what stage a relationship is at?
That is a very important thing to think about. One way people do it, just practically speaking in the beginning, which I don't know how much how helpful it is, but, you know, when people do online dating, sometimes you can check off long-term relationship, you know, dating for fun or friendship, or, you know, want marriage, want children. So that's one sort of way to, in the beginning, try to pick somebody who's at your level. But I think that I tell people that the first few dates just to have fun. I mean, if sex is something important to you, just take that off the table and don't do that, right? Because that's going to make you attached or exclusive or whatever for some people. So you just date for fun and have a good time. You don't want to pressure the person right up front. But I think at some point, usually either the guy or the woman, if someone hasn't brought it up, will say, like, hey, what are you looking for? And it doesn't mean, you know, I want to have kids in a year. Like, are you going to do that? Like, people ask that on the second date sometimes. Not that, but more just like, yeah, this is what I'm looking for, you know, in a sort of a casual way, but just putting it out there so that if the person says, yeah, I really like you, but I'm not looking to get married in 5 years, and you have a woman who's 38 and wants to have kids and her clock is ticking and that's not going to work for her, then, you know, I think it would be smart for her to say, either to date him casually and say, well, I'm really looking for something more serious, we can date a little while, whatever, but or to just be like, this isn't the person for me, you're really great, but I'm really looking for somebody who's looking for something more serious too, because of her timeline, so...
As you, not necessarily in terms of formal research, but I'm sure that in terms of just who you talk to, who you provide counsel for, you find that there are certain traits or qualities that men may be looking for in a potential girlfriend or wife, as opposed to somebody to just go out and have fun with. And I suspect, again, please feel free to disagree if this is off base, that it may be a little surprising to women that men are not necessarily looking for certain things. I mean, if you look at TV commercials or if you look at magazine covers, you'd certainly believe, or you might find it easy to believe, that men are just interested in women who look like supermodels or just have these, you know, these incredibly beautiful, perfect looking women. Is that something that maybe women have a little bit of a fear of that's unnecessary? I mean, is that something that maybe, sure, everybody likes to look at, likes the idea of having a beautiful partner, I think, but is that necessarily what you think that men are always after?
I don't think so. I mean, I certainly hope not. I certainly wasn't a supermodel and I was in New York. I often have single clients say, oh my God, in New York, you have to be a trophy wife. And, you know, I'd be much better off in New Jersey or Ohio, you know, and there may be some truth, like a little bit of truth to that. But I think it's, again, the limiting beliefs guide you in what's possible. And you don't really, I mean, I don't think you want somebody who just wants you for your looks anyway, because those are going to fade. You know what I mean? And hopefully if you, for you, what's important is like your mind, your spirit, who you are in the world, and, you know, you like the way you look, then you want to find a partner who feels the same way about you. Otherwise, you're not going to be happy together, right? Because if you gain a little weight when you have a kid or whatever, you know, he's going to go marry someone else. So I don't think you're looking. My book is not about shallow relationships. But to answer your question about what men want, I mean, as I said, I've taught at the Learning Annex. I've had a group of men usually at my classes there, and I have, like, you know, at least right now, 5-6 men in my coaching practice, but for the majority of my clients I have women. But I think that they're really, one thing that they told me is that they're looking for a quality called radiance, which is a woman who really likes themselves and likes men. Because sometimes you'll even have a supermodel that is gorgeous but has a lot of disdain or past baggage about men, and they don't like to be around that because they want to feel wanted and liked, and they want someone who's happy and who likes their life. So that quality of radiance, I think, is a really good word to kind of sum up what I think many men look for in a woman. And a woman who likes herself, is confident about herself, and knows who she is. So that way they know what they're getting. Otherwise, it's going to be, if someone's playing the rules or trying to be what they think the guy wants, it's going to be a big switcheroo. It's probably not going to work out in the end. So I think that that's a key quality. And, you know, sure, if it's going to, you should feel good about how you look. So if it helps you to wear something that makes you feel good, or, you know, do something for yourself so that you like the way you look, I think that's good for anyone on dates, whether it's a man or a woman. But I think that those qualities have changed. And there's been research that actually says that, I think a Pew survey that says that men are no longer so interested in whether women cook, you know, and some of the things that they used to look for, and women may be a little less concerned about the wallet, although I think they're still concerned, like they have problems dating someone unemployed, but they might date somebody who's, like, you know, a little younger, or makes a little less sometimes, like that's changing. I think actually men are changing those stereotypes quicker than women, which is something that's a problem. So it works both ways.
When you're talking about conscious dating, it strikes me that this is an idea, again, of being an active participant in actually setting the stage and trying to lay a groundwork for how you want to build a relationship. But if it's, it strikes me that there might be the possibility of possibly scaring a man off if you make it too clear that this is part of a process, that this date is like maybe the first step toward getting married. If you've got this process in mind,
they must be idiotic if they don't know that anyway.
But yeah, well, maybe that's certainly a fair point. But is that something that you necessarily have to share and say, you know, okay, I'm checking this box and we're going to start here and we're going to go down this road? Is that something that really you need to keep maybe to yourself and not, it doesn't even have to be discussed with a partner, at least not at the beginning, just something that say this is a not necessarily secret plan, but it's a personal way of going about things as opposed to telling somebody right up front that this is how we're going about this relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to be very honest and assertive, but I still think that it's a little much to go on a first date and be like, I'm not saying it couldn't work for anyone, but to be like, hi, my name is Sheila, and I want to get married, like, 1 year from today, or whatever, you know, it's kind of like, well, do you care who you're going to marry, you know, do you want to know anything about me? So I think it's good to stay who you are, no matter who you're with, but it's appropriate to kind of let the relationship unfold and grow a little bit. And, you know, one joke I've heard from the male side from clients is that, like, there's a site called JDate. It's a Jewish dating site, and that just happens to be the one they were talking about. But they say, like, women would go on a date and really do that on the first date or the second date. This is what I want. This is what I want. Kind of like very much an interview. And whereas I think it's good to know who you are, again, if it's a little bit disconcerting, and I've heard men say, well, sometimes I like to date younger women because they're more there to just be on a date and have a good time, and there's less pressure and a little more time to kind of get to know them and have a relationship before the agenda. So I think there needs to be a balance there. However, I very much think it's important not to, like, I don't like the word waste your time, because I think you can learn from every relationship, but I think to only commit to somebody who meets your core essentials, which I talk about in the book. So if you know somebody says on their profile that they never want kids, and you're desperate to get married and have kids, hopefully within a year or two because of your timeline, then, you know, don't just, again, go on your unconscious and your emotions and commit to that person, because you're not going to get the results that you want. So it needs to be a balance.
Is there a benchmark, maybe a time frame, or just simply something that you look at and say, okay, it's time to have the discussion about marriage? Things have gone this far. We need to either decide whether we're going to go any further or whether we just need to go in a different direction. Because after all, I mean, who wants to be in a dead-end relationship if one partner's goal is to get married and the other's isn't?
Sure, the person whose goal isn't wants to be in a dead-end relationship. I mean, usually, traditionally speaking, that's the man, you know, although I'm sure sometimes it works the other way around as well, but I think that in high 80% of my client population, or maybe even women in general, do have a benchmark, which I can talk about for when they're going to get married, or sort of like shit or get off the pot, so to speak, excuse my language. But I have to say that, you know, because conventions and rules are changing, that I have had clients, which is kind of refreshing too, that, you know, are like, well, I could get married, I could have kids, but I could be happy either way. I'm really just looking for someone to love and a partner, and I'm not so agenda-driven. So that's happening more with women too, the way it used to be with men, you know. However, having said that, I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with knowing what you want and then dating for that, right, rather than just catching someone and then expecting them to change their agenda. You know, that's really dishonest. So I think that, for example, if I have clients that are in their late 30s that know that, okay, I focus on my career and now I want to have a kid and get married, you know, they can't just, again, on the second date expect whoever to comply with that. But I think you need to give people some time. You need to date people until you see if you're in the same ballpark. So that's the first milestone, right? And then become exclusive if you're basically on the same page. So you should know then already. But, you know, of course, people can say things and then, you know, not follow through. That happens all the time. So then you're dating them exclusively, and I think it's appropriate, usually to wait about a year, but I've had clients that, you know, after 6 months, they lived with someone or became engaged and then got married in a year. So that happens too. It really depends on the inner readiness of the people, and you tend to attract somebody who's at the same level of readiness as you usually. So if you're really ready, you know what you want, you're really clear, you like yourself, you like your life, hopefully you will be more successful at attracting that type of person too unconsciously. So that's one thing, to work on yourself first. But secondly, to not be afraid to walk away. It's very, very hard when you've invested and you love someone and you feel like you're so right for each other. But ultimately, I don't think it's fair to either people to wait 5 years, let's say, lose your chance to have a kid, and then, you know, be with that person, be resentful and blaming him the rest of your life, or maybe he doesn't even marry you, and then where are you? So ultimately, again, you have to love yourself enough to be fair to yourself and the other person. So maybe you want to get married in a year, and you decide, okay, well, I will wait a year and a half or 2 years for that person. We'll meet in the middle. But, you know, this is a core thing that I'm not willing to, let's say, give up children. So if he's the right person for me, he's going to worry about me too, and there's enough space in this relationship to honor both of us. I don't necessarily think of that as an ultimatum or anything. I think that that is, you know, a true relationship where people can be on different timelines, unfortunately, sometimes, but if they love each other enough that they talk about it and they agree to meet in the middle and hopefully can work towards that without necessarily one person being it all about them, you know? Or they could agree to love each other and to separate. You know, that happens too. It doesn't mean someone's the right life partner for you because you love them.
Wouldn't it be great if the answer was always a clear-cut yes or no when you had the big discussion? if somebody says...
Yeah, you probably wouldn't need the big discussion then. You would just see it from the act. Like a really ready man, a lot of times, like, you just see it from their action. And, you know, I always think sometimes with the clients I have that doesn't exist anymore. But then recently I've been pretty surprised, like pleasantly surprised by a few clients where they didn't even have to have a conversation. I think I read that 78, I can't remember the exact percentage, but... of couples when they came out of the marriage bureau in Manhattan were interviewed, and like a very high percentage of women had to have a conversation with the guy about getting married before he proposed. So I think that's something still to do that's sort of inherent in the male psyche a little bit, that it's a big step and, oh, you know, it's a little scary, and that why not just coast, you know, even if they love that person and they know they're going to get married, but to actually do it sometimes needs a conversation from the woman. You know, I don't think that's an ultimatum, or it's just normally the way it is.
Mm-hmm. And yet there's always going to be the ambivalent answer. Sure, I'd like to get married, but not right now. And then, okay, where
okay,
are you
then? When? When are you thinking about,
yeah,
right?
Where are you realistically when that happens?
And I'm not even joking, like, maybe that's not the exact words, but, you know, okay, so you don't want to get married right now. When are you thinking? I think, again, we talked about not making things personal as much as possible. If you know yourself and like yourself, it is, of course, it's going to feel personal, but not to make it about, like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Why doesn't he like me enough? Blah, 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 and that whole conversation, but more, this is what I really want for myself, and I really want to stand by that. I also love you, and I really would love to see this happen with you. What is it you want? And to first make space to hear, for him to hear what you want, regardless of who it's with, right? What does he want, regardless of who it's with? And then we really want to be together. Can we make a space where this could actually work for both of us? Or is that not possible? That's the conversation. So it's not necessarily like trying to apply the pressure to convince someone to like sell out and have what you want. It's more, you know, is there a way? Because that's also what marriage is about, right? There are plenty of times that we're different and we disagree on things, but we have to create a space. There are core things we won't change in each of us, right, that we need to stick by. And then a lot of things we compromise on and have to work together. And that's why marriage is hard work. But it has to start in dating, too, sometimes, to see if it's even possible. If you just play the rules and say, yes, 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 whatever you want, and I'm not saying that's the rules, but you're just passive, then you'll never know whether that person's going to be able to respect you, to work with you, to honor what you most need. So it's good short term and a failure long term. So, mm-hmm. So yeah.
So really, with the idea of ultimatums, I guess that's kind of a nuclear option to be wielded very carefully. Because I can see all sorts of things happening where the ultimate result is to either get a clear cut yes or no, but stampeding somebody, or if they feel like they're stampeded, let's put it that way, into an answer, or pressuring them into a direct answer that they may not be ready to give, carries its own dangers, I would think.
You know, relationships and life is dangerous in general. I mean, you look at half of marriages end in divorce, and I think someone told me that a third of marriages are unhappy, so that only leaves what, like, a very small percentage. So, you know, you can never have any guarantees in life, but I think the best you can do is try to be true to yourself and to try to be fair to that other person as well. But it's very dangerous also to, if you're 39 or 38, which is a lot of the clients that I have, to sit around and wait 5 years, and then the guy tells you, you know what, because this happens to people too. Like, you know, maybe they have other kids, and they say, okay, yeah, we'll work towards it, but I need to slow everything down. And then they don't want kids at all. I mean, you can never have any guarantees, but I think you have to be fair to yourself and to that other person. So again, if you want to get married in a year, you think that's enough time because you're really on a timeline, then maybe you extend it another year and you work towards that, or try, you know, but to not have any sort of say, which I think is the position women have been in the past, I don't think it's fair to anybody, you know, because then you can't really blame the other person that you lost your chance to have kids or whatever it is. I mean, nothing is black and white. You can't come from a place of desperation or trying to rush the universe, but I think you have to take responsibility for what you want, not put it on another person. And that isn't necessarily an ultimatum. That's a stance of inner being empowered, you know, about your life vision, and hopefully the right person's going to meet with you there. Otherwise, they, you know, they wouldn't be good in marriage anyway.
What is your advice when it comes to the issue of living together before marriage? Does it make it harder for men to commit and delay the marriage timeline, or is it a good thing or a bad thing in the overall picture? What's your feeling on this?
Well, I can't say it's necessarily a fun thing, although I've had a few clients that surprised me by having like almost no problems when they live together. I was sort of shocked because I feel like there's the courtship of the mystery and, you know, having the most quality time with that person. And then, you know, when you get married, it's sort of like the awakening, right, where they're roommates. And so the reason that people haven't chosen to live with someone in the past have been sort of these old wives things, right? Like, you know, why buy the cow if you get the milk for free? Like, they'll be less, you know, likely to propose. Or, you know, oh, he's going to be less in love with you if he sees that you are a slob or whatever, these kind of things. But they're all fear-based, right? So I think that, you know, it depends where you're coming from. If you have a traditional mentality that you really believe that you shouldn't live with somebody, that that's something that's for marriage, and that you would rather get the commitment first and then do that, but that's the order of things. If that really comes from a place of self-love, then I say honor that. If you're somebody who really feels like, hey, I want to see what I'm getting into, I'm committing to life, then, hey, live with that person and see what you're getting and see if you can work things through. Personally, I probably, at this point in my career, just think that the latter one's a better idea, because then you both know what you're getting. And even though new things will come up when you're married, I mean, I think Gay Hendricks says, you know, people can live together for 7 years and then the unconscious contract comes up when you get married, because that person feels like family and all your other deeper stuff comes out. So there's no guarantee that if you live with somebody, you won't still have major issues. But I think it is a good step to really seeing more about someone, who someone is. And if that's the reason they don't marry you, then, you know what I mean? that tells you something too. You can still have boundaries too. You could say, I'm going to live with you for a year and either we're going to get engaged hopefully by that point, or I have to move on. But it does make it harder, right? It's harder to move in and then move out than to be in your own space. So I think that's another reason that sometimes people choose not to live together unless they're fully committed. And I can kind of see a rationale for either way, so I don't try to tell people what to do. I think you have to know yourself and really look at both sides and decide what will work best for you. But one thing I will say before I end that question is that in my book, When Mars Women Date, I really talk to women about if they do live with someone or even if they don't, to really find out whether your man is expecting you to do all the cleaning and housework and all the childcare and work, and to start early to discuss those things instead of just try to get the ring and then be miserable your whole life, because that is truly going to affect you. That's something that many successful career women now are doing, that they do 80% of the housework, most of the childcare, and they bring home more income or as much income. And that's something that doesn't have to be that way anymore, but it needs to be discussed early on before it's too late. So,
it's been a pleasure speaking to you today. I'm going to give you the last word here. You've talked about a couple of your books. Go ahead and give us those titles again, and maybe any other resources that you think would be helpful for women in bettering their relationships.
Oh, thank you. Well, so my most recent book is called When Mars Women Date, How Career Women Can Love Themselves into the Relationship of Their Dreams. And if anyone's heard of the book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, she talks about, there's a chapter in there that talks about getting a partner who's a really good partner, an equal partner, and how that will help you succeed in the world. And so I wrote this book even before that, but I completely agree with that, and it's sort of how to do that for women. There's Dating from the Inside Out, How the Law of Attraction Can Help You Manifest Love. I forget the exact title. It's terrible. It's from 2008. So that one that we just talked about.
Well, you wrote the book. Somebody else probably wrote the title. Is that the way it usually
actually
works?
I had Dating from the Inside Out, and then they added How to Use the Law of Attraction. I think it's in Matters of the Heart. They wrote that part. But since then, I've also written A Shared Vision, 100 conversations for couples to co-create the lives of their dreams, and that's for couples that are getting towards engagement. And poor men, it's 100 conversations to have, 100 topic life areas where you can write his and her responses and then come up with a shared vision. So it's kind of fun, at least for women. I don't know about that for men. And then I wrote one with my husband on the cover, which is called 100 ways to treat your mate like royalty under $10. So for people who feel that they don't have a lot of money to date, which gets expensive, it's just sort of ideas about how to be romantic, whether you're in a relationship or dating. And they're all under $10. And if you go to parachutejumppublishing.com, I have a list of, I think right now it's probably like 12 books that I've written. And also my other website for coaching with dating is whenmarswomendate.com or Dr. Paulette Sherman, PaulettSherman.com. And that's my psychotherapy and coaching site as well.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And this is Mike Hennessy, and on behalf of the team at DecodingHim.com, I'd like to thank you for listening and wish you the very best in your relationships. To listen to other interviews from our experts, please visit DecodingHim.com.